Welcome back to Copper Country Today. I'm your host, Rick Allen. And joining me on this segment is someone that has been a guest many times with me on this show when I used to do it about a year, year and a half ago. She's been on the show a couple of times since I've been gone. And that is because this is a problem that just never goes away. And we'd love to be able to change that one at one point. My guest is Mary Niemela, who's the director of the Barber Kettle Gunlock Shelter. And Mary, when you come on, we usually are talking about domestic violence. And unfortunately, we're still going to be doing that. First, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks for having me back, Rick. And nice to see you back, too.
You know, this is a, you know, as I said, a conversation that, you know, we just want to make sure it keeps going. And that's why we do welcome you on this show, because...
Yeah, that's one of our goals, is to keep talking about it, you know. And that's certainly one way to keep people in the know that it's still happening and that we still need the help out there of our community to keep supporting us.
Now, let's go ahead and start things off. I know many people are going to be aware of what the shelter does, but let's just start with, tell us what services you do provide.
Well, we're a 24-hour shelter. Somebody's there every day of the year and 24 hours a day. And we're a shelter for victims of domestic violence and their children. And many times, if you've heard my program, you've heard me say that 95% of the abuse in the United States is against women, and these are reported cases. We certainly do provide services for males who are victims of domestic violence as well. We have to find another safe environment for them to be in. If they are in that situation where they need housing. But nonetheless, that the majority of victims in the United States are women. And so we have that service as well as a residential facility, but we also provide outreach services. We have an outreach advocate that helps out in the community as well as in the court system. And we can help with personal protection orders. We have a support group that meets on Thursday nights with child care. As well as we're thinking of starting an afternoon group during the daytime, probably on a Tuesday, if that works for everybody. So we'll have more out about that, or if someone's interested that wants to come to our support group but can't in the evening, you know, give us a call at 337-5623 and talk with Jennifer and see if that will work for them. And we do one-on-ones as well. And of course, there's no charge for any of our services.
If somebody is in an abusive relationship and they do contact the shelter, how do you come in and help them right there?
Well, if somebody comes to the shelter for services, of course, we're one of our biggest things that we do is we listen to them and we believe what they're saying because, you know, who are we to judge that situation? It's their situation and we listen to what they're saying and we support their decisions. So it's kind of like listen, believe, and support for the victim of domestic violence that comes to us or calls. And certainly you can call anonymously. You don't have to tell us who you are if you just want to ask questions and find out what our services are. Or maybe you don't really think that what you're going through right now is domestic violence, because I think a lot of people think, well, I don't have any black eyes or bruises or cuts or whatever, so who's going to believe me? But really it's all about the... not just that, but it's about the emotional abuse or being isolated or being threatened or, you know, intimidation. And there's many forms of domestic violence besides the physical part of it.
Now, we've talked about keeping the conversation going, and the conversation was in the center stage, in the spotlight, through much of the year during the NFL season because of the attention that the NFL was giving with the different commercials. And really spurned down because of some actions taken by NFL players that they realized that this was something that they wanted to focus their energies on. Well, that campaign has, you know, come to a close now that the NFL season is over. So how's the conversation continuing?
I think it's still there. Of course, it comes out in the media a lot when they're talking about domestic violence on other things that have happened in the community. Just the other day, I was listening to the news and the Ray Rice thing came back up again. And we need to keep talking about it, whether it's somebody in the spotlight or it's your neighbor. And certainly the NFL incidents that have happened over the past year have brought a lot of attention to domestic violence and NFL supporting our cause as well then, too. And unfortunately, it takes something like that to happen to bring it to a venue that could really bring domestic violence into the conversation, and it would have been better if they could have just said that they're not going to tolerate it without having to have something happen the way it did to bring it into the spotlight.
Well, and unfortunately, too, it took a few incidences to be caught on camera.
Right.
And in most domestic violence situations, there are no cameras.
Right,
you know,
right.
And they're not as easily identifiable. Maybe some cases not as physically extreme, but they're still just as much of a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So did you find that the cases that were in the media encouraged people to come forward?
Well, you mean in the NFL?
No, in locally, in those locally. That, you know, victims that, yeah. You know, that see, okay, you know, there's conversation going on now. Maybe somebody's willing to listen. You know, maybe I'm not, you know, in this sort of extreme situation that, you know, some of the celebrities were involved mm-hmm. in, but that doesn't lessen what they were going through in their own home.
Right, and I don't think that there was any conversation of people who came in throughout that time saying, well, now I know I can get help because it's brought into the spotlight even more. Because I think people who have been in a domestic violence situation for a long time, or maybe it's even just happening, think, well, I don't know where my support system is yet, because who's going to believe me that, you know, he's such a nice guy, which is often the case. And because it's a behavior and a belief system that a batterer has that he can do this to somebody who he loves. And so I don't know that that was any more reason why people would have came and sought our services. You know, before we started the show, we were talking about different ways that we can still bring it into the community after the NFL is done. And one of the things that we did was we connected with Chester Markle, who was a retired Green Bay Packer player. And he came and talked to our coalition in December, and we hope to do some work with him in the future as well, locally, just to keep talking, because here you have somebody who was retired since 1981, I believe, and it's been going on for a long time. This isn't just something new that's happened in the NFL. It's been going on for a long time. And, of course, it was looked at differently, but it was looked at as in society is different, too. I mean, this is our 35th year anniversary of being a funded shelter, and we're one of the first maybe five shelters that are funded in the state of Michigan. So, you know, we've been funded since 1980, but we actually started in 1979, and that's basically when shelters really got started, was in the late 70s and early 80s and in Michigan anyway. And so, you know, it's been happening for a long time. And so they're really, the service that we have, even though we've been there for 35 years, is really something that was needed a whole lot earlier than that.
And that conversation, as we try to keep it going, you're right, maybe it's not the immediate effect of somebody going to get help, but at least if we're trying to change the mindset or continuing to alter it so that people understand that this type of behavior is not acceptable. From a male, I would want to see, you know, men say, well, why on earth, you know, would I think I have a right to behave this way or treat my significant other this way? I have said before, we learned in the sandbox that you don't hit girls.
Mm-hmm.
So why... after, you know, learning those lessons early on, that's, you know, some men grow up and then forget that and become physically abusive. I think most boys are, at least if they're brought up properly, are taught, you know, correct ways of how to treat a woman.
Mm-hmm.
But again, then someone in relationships don't. As you mentioned, in, you know, how the you've been in a funded shelter since 1980. Well, if I remember 1980 fairly well, I can go back 35 years and think of parents
mm-hmm.
and how moms and dads used to interact with each other, you know, back in those days. That has changed as far as what's acceptable or not. Now, it doesn't mean that the problem's any less,
right.
But I think if you go back, you know, that long, you get a different picture of how, you know, the wife was to, you know, the man was king of the castle. The wife, mm-hmm. you know, had her role, and you see that, you know, played out in a lot of people's relationships. We have a different take on that now.
Well, I think, you know, there are in relationships, I think that there's still that control, though, that, you know, they're in charge. And it may not be thought of as the king of the castle anymore, but I don't know. I think it's still happening. We're still seeing domestic violence. We're still in operation. You know, not this year, but the year before was one of our biggest numbers of residents in the shelter, and it's still out there. And I think it may not, back in 1980, may not have been in the public eye as much, because the laws really didn't change until 1994, where it helped help law enforcement change to not have to, or help law enforcement to be able to arrest and without, like it was a warrantless or victimless prosecution. It was a warrantless arrest. They didn't have to find go and get a warrant from the prosecutor before they could arrest somebody on domestic violence. And those laws didn't change till then. It helped the law enforcement, and it also helped the victim that she no longer had to write the statement to say what happened. I mean, you know, it's a victimless prosecution, so that means that they don't need the victim, unless it's a felony, to testify to something that's happened. If the, you know, police officer is writing the report right and as complete as what's being told to them. Yes, they still interview the victim and get her side of the story, but it's a warrantless arrest. So I think that they can go on what they've seen or what they hear there, and there could be things that are seen, you know, things thrown around the home. Children are witnesses too, or the neighbors or whoever called in. And if they believe that there's probable cause, the facts that any fair, average-minded person would believe that a crime has been committed and domestic violence is a crime, that they have that right to arrest, where they didn't have that back in 1980. You know, they walked them around the block. They didn't even have that in 1992 or 3 before the laws changed. You know, they would try to calm them down and make them promise to not do that again. And it wasn't that they were doing the wrong thing. It's that that's what they were instructed to do at that time. Of course, if there was injury, that was different. You know, they saw it a whole lot. I mean, usually when I do presentations out in the community, I bring this article back from like 1904, 1905 from the Daily Mining Gazette, where there was a husband who used an axe on his wife, and because he couldn't get her to do what he wanted her to do, which is kind of like what our conversation was before. And he was punished. He was punished, you know, in that article. And boy, that's still happening. Now, it might not be with an axe so much, but it's not something that can't be used, you know. And you know, the laws have changed, but they still have to go through the court system before anybody can be held accountable for that.
Yeah, and I guess that's what I was kind of alluding to, is our awareness and definition has changed, where you go back, you know, 30, 40 years ago, and that was dad being dad, you know, or,
right.
You know.
It's a learned behavior.
Yes, correct. Yes. You know, and children, of course, see, you know, the parents act this way and interact with each other this way. And, you know, where it's not a, you know, drop down fight, they'll sometimes say, you know, I remember those from, you know, my folks as well. Yet, you know, in ways that I would never, you know, even think of with my wife behaving that way.
But, right. It's 60% of boys that grow up in violent homes may become batterers, you know, and 50% of girls grow up in violent homes may become victims. I mean, it's not to say that everybody is going to do that, be that way. But if it's a long ongoing thing and it's never going to change, and there's never going to be anybody held accountable for that, there's that percentage that will grow up with that learned behavior, thinking that's how that's a sign of love.
Talking with Mary Niemela. She's the director of the Barber Kettle Gunlock Shelter Home. You have a terrific fundraiser coming up, that something is very important to the shelter home. Let's talk about that.
Okay. This is our 7th annual spring music celebration and silent auction. And again, we're having it at the Studio Pizza Orpheum Theater, which is formerly the Pick Theater in Hancock. And it's on Sunday, March 22nd, from 4 to 6 p.m. And we have a little different venue of music this time. Viney Willa is returning again, and they're two women that really have entertained us in the last few years as being on one of the groups on stage. And two other groups have joined us this year, and they're Tom Cataline and Ron Lottie, and neither one of those are new to the stage as well, although they have not performed at the Orpheum Theater before. But They've certainly been in their community and been very generous with their time to support many good causes besides our own here at the shelter. And we also have a silent auction going on. And, of course, there's always good items on there, massages and handmade items that you can use for gifts, or a beautiful wooden handmade wooden benches and different things like that, as well as oil changes and car detailing that we've had in the past. And hopefully we'll be able to latch on to those items as well again this year. And we will be serving some refreshments, and there's a suggested donation of $5 at the door, but that's up to you. And also Mike's has his staff there, and he can be serving pizzas as well, and you can order those and take them in. It's a very casual event. I mean, there's a stage that if you want to dance to the music, or if you just want to sit at tables and chat and listen to the music and look at the auction items, that's a choice of yours too. So.
And the Orpheum Theater is a great venue for this, because of you have the area where you can sit down and enjoy something to eat, if you you know, ginger ales if you choose, and then there's the dance floor, and you got a way to be able to move around a little bit.
Right. It's a good time. I mean, and each group will play about for 25 minutes, and you know, we'll, in between, we'll do a little bit of conversation about the shelter and why we're there, and while they're changing groups, and it'll be a good event. So that's on Sunday, March 22nd, from 4 to 6 at the Studio Pizza's Orpheum Theater.
And you don't need to buy tickets ahead of time?
No, there's no tickets. It's just a suggested donation if you'd like.
And how will the money help?
Well, it certainly goes to direct services to clients, you know, whether we have clients in the shelter or not, we're there 24/7, so we have to, you know, keep the place operating, and certainly direct services to clients is not only how we help them, whether it be transportation or different things that come up for them, as well as to keeping the place operating with the utilities and things like that. So
we were talking a few minutes ago about, you know, trying to change the mindset in some ways that, you know, has been successful, but it's got to be an ongoing battle with the way that relationships between men and women and sort of our ideals of women especially are portrayed in the media, whether it's through advertising or, you know, through movies and books that have been popular recently, that really give a skewed, false impression of, you know, what relationships are about and how people want to be treated or should be treated.
Right. And there's so much in the media. I mean, we look at magazines every day, and we just see the pictures and how it's portraying women to look, and you know, or the way that society thinks that we should look. And, you know, it's bad enough for a woman that's in that situation who's been called dumb and stupid and worthless day in and day out, and wish that you were never born. I mean, being told those things, and then look at covers of beautiful women, and you think, I don't look like that. Even though the woman may be very beautiful, she certainly doesn't feel that way on the inside after being told that by somebody who loves them, you know. And it's really hard for people to believe that somebody can still love somebody after being told that. But, you know, it's a behavior and belief. I said that before already, again, but I'll say it again, is that we have to understand that women still do love their partner, the person. It's what he's doing is the behavior. And that's the same thing that's portrayed when we see the advertising of different things or movies. We talked about movies before too, and how people who may potentially be batterers can look at those things and say, hey, well, look, it works. You know, I can do that too. I can have that power and control. Because that's basically what domestic violence is all about, is the power and control that one person has over the other person.
Yeah, when we're in this sort of atmosphere right now where we're seeing, you know, couples going and spending, you know, millions of dollars to see, you know, a movie that features somebody being in a horribly abusive relationship, and then that it's being portrayed as something that is, you know, a role model for relationships. And the largest demographic of fans of that kind of a movie being women, and that, you know, that message men are trying, you know, they try to interpret, and some interpret it the wrong way, that they, you know, they have licenses to behave in ways that are wrong. I mean, this has got to be, you know, for somebody that with runs a shelter like this and trying to help women, as I said, an ongoing battle. You're trying to, you know, encourage people to have conversations about domestic violence, to change their mindset. Meanwhile, in many forms of media, we're glorifying domestic violence, and it's almost in vogue right now.
Right, right. That is, and it's just it's way too much out there as far as that it's okay to even see this. And I think that if we do see it, then we're supporting that to make more movies or write more books or make more ads or do that, you know. And although wherever we go, I mean, we don't know who batterers are. I mean, they could be waiting on us every day, and we don't know that. And so it's really hard to. But when there are things that are put right in front of us that we can not take part in, to do our part to maybe stop some of the way that people think that we can portray women, I think we should take part and not take part in that.
Do you find, from talking with victims, that there's a period of time that they go through where they know that they're unhappy with their relationship, but maybe they haven't gotten to the point where they're defined it as that they are being abused and that they need help, sort of like somebody who has an addiction sometimes has to come to the realization, wow, this is really wrong. I need to do something about this.
Often it takes sometimes maybe the children to get somebody to leave, you know, and early on, and when I started the shelter, that's what happened. Was a 16-year-old girl told her mom, "I'm tired of the abuse. I'm not going to take this anymore, Mom. I'm leaving." And Mom was very surprised to hear that this was happening to her too by the girl's father, her husband, and the girl had seen what was happening to her mother, and so they left, and there was an 8-year-old boy involved as well, and sometimes it takes that to make that difference. Sometimes women are strong women, and it happens to them once, and they're like, "Hey, I'm out of here. You know, I'm done. I'm not doing that anymore. I'm not going to live like this." But often, I mean, like I said, they love their partner, so there's times when, you know, they just think, "Well, I can do this. You know, I would be a failure to other people if I left this person because he's a good supporter. He's good to everyone else. He's, you know, pillar in the church maybe, or he has a really good job in the community, and it would look bad to him if I left." And so there's many reasons why women stay and endure that, and children are a huge reason why women stay in that. But the two big reasons are fear and love. One, they love the person, and fear the behavior and the belief and the consequences if they do leave.
And she may feel, you know, what will become of him if she does leave, that he needs her. That's
right.
You know, I don't know if that results in enabling him to do that or not, but, you know, she doesn't want to abandon, you know, this man that who, you know, she did love or still loves,
right?
Because once she, you know, removes herself from the picture, she might think, well, he's just going to get worse, or he'll, you know.
Leaving is a very dangerous time for her. And it's not that we don't help people build up a safety plan, but it is hard for her to leave because she doesn't know what he's going to be up to.
Now, it's good to hear that, you know, you mentioned that children are often now speaking up and helping the parents get help.
Mm-hmm. That was also 24 years ago, too. So.
Oh, okay.
it's a while back, yeah.
As a friend or a neighbor, you know, we're taught a lot to mind our own business, to, you know, don't bother what your neighbors are doing. But if you feel something like this is going on and you want to help, what are some things you could do?
Well, certainly you could, you know, try to talk to her. Don't necessarily get in between something, because you could be harmful to yourself and to her. If you walk away, the abuse is going to go back to her. He's going to be very nice to you, possibly, or he might not be. So we have to remember that we have to just help out in whatever way we can. Call 911 if you see it happening on the street or you hear it in a household. You know, get somebody to check them out.
Can you get the phone number again one more time with the shelter?
Sure. It's 337-5623 to call for any type of services that we have available. And, you know, we have a lot of events happening in the future and ways to support the shelter. Our Friends of the Shelter campaign is starting in the end of March. The Kiwanis Path fundraiser is happening in May. And our golf scramble certainly in August. And we will have a dinner in the fall to celebrate our 35th anniversary. So there's lots of things coming up that you can, ways to help. And if you ever have the need in your organization or group or your office that want to help, just give us a call. And we'll help you do even just the littlest fundraiser of collecting paper toweling or something like that, or whatever ways we all need that help too.
Been talking with Mary Niemela, the director of the Barbara Kittle Gunlock Shelter Home. They had their spring music celebration and silent auction celebrating 35 years. So celebrating is a little bit of a strange word, but the 35 years that the shelter has been funded, we wish it wasn't needed, but let's keep it going while it is. That event will be held Sunday, March 22nd from 4 to 6 p.m. at Studios Pizza's Orpheum Theater in Hancock. I do hope that you join them and help them out. Mary, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Rick.
Cover Country Today. We'll be right back.